Okay. Continuation of the previous plus months long. So, the principle of work. Possible existence of other science, material science back then, and simply build upon what is known. We get and possible interpretation of the so the occurrence of the word Bhumandala, for instance. I found like in 9 places or so in the Bhagavad Tongue. Or simply just
generally refer to the basically the surface of the earth as it stretches into all directions. The Giles, the king, Pretor, or whoever ruled in all, you know, the entire mandala, the surface of the earth. So, yeah, he ruled all the world, that kind of general statement, it's what it seems to be. Now, Bhu or Bhurloka, can be said to be more generally referring to the realm of Bhu, which is pretty much the same. We stand here, we look in all directions and we see a world, right? With the surface under our feet. So whether we speak of Bhutale or Bhum, nonetheless, the surface under our feet stretching in all directions, or the general world, what we see in all directions, that are just two different ways of describing it, right? The same thing, that is Bhu. And Bhu then means this realm where things, forms have appeared and do appear and then disappear. Forms that can be perceived by our eyes and other senses of our bodies here. That then would naturally mean, you know, this is earth, this is Bhurloka. And then it is then, as was said, limited by the loka, which is sometimes said to be a mountain. But the word, what was it? Look it up, something with A. Translated to mountain can also be seen more general as something fixed, something like a fundament or something like that. What then is that? I don't know what to tell that.
living in harmony with the Spirit. Of course, when they invite the scriptures, it's natural that they use words in the scriptures according to their own experience of it. Back then, 5,000 years ago, even further back, people were traveling. Were fairly well acquainted with a very large area of the world. Trade routes between India and Mesopotamia. They had a decent understanding of a fairly large part of the world with seas and lands, with different vegetation and people. And in the Bhagavatam we find the, again, the description of the Bhuloka, Bhumandala, Bhutale, as comprised of seas and, you know, and dvipas, islands or continents divided into varshas, regions, lands. In fact, several cultures in the old days, Mesopotamia, Greece, and so on, that concept of the seven seas, which you probably heard, right? Different parts of the world we find it differently described. And why seven in particular? Well, when we say the seven seas, if you ever heard that expression, we generally use it in a, you know, general sense of, oh, this is a big world. Seven seas, which is, so it may very well be that usage was there geographically, geometrically, mathematically exact number, but that the number was used because seven is carries a certain sevens that are related to fundamental cosmological relations and proportions, and you know that kind of. So, in any case, we should, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says that things there in the Bhagavatam and Purana and so on are, you know, there's knowledge there that is esoteric, not just simple physicalist geography or whatever. So I would say this is a reasonable, at least possible interpretation that we are giving here. And also, again, resting upon and compatible with what we actually know about the Puranic age. And I think that here it is wise not to delve into speculations. You know, they had Vimanas and flying far out in space and looking at the universe, physical universe from out there, and writing it down in their books that this is how it looks. That's our way of thinking. We want to go with spaceships out. But of course, how far did we get? And there's a lot of speculations there too. So we don't have any evidence that people had that kind of almost superhuman physical travel abilities or whatever. And if we build on such assumptions in our presentations, for instance, there in the exhibition of a planetarium, then, well, we simply lose a lot of academic credibility, obviously. And there is, to be fair and honest, quite a bit of such speculations in India. Sometimes fueled by nationalism. show that India was really great back then and had advanced science and so on. Well, India certainly had advanced science, but you need to be careful with thinking of advanced science as the materialistic physicalist science of today. The advanced science of Puranic India was much more advanced because it was about life of the cosmos rather than the matter and the geography of it. So again, we have to be cautious about allowing modern materialistic contaminations to enter into our understanding and interpretation of the Puranic knowledge and of the ancient cosmology in general. So I spoke yesterday or whatever about just, you know, testing something here to round off this preview with. And seen in this perspective of the Bhumandala, again, which is how it's actually described in the Bhagavatam, simply meaning the surface of the earth. And Bhurloka simply meaning the world, visible world lit by the sun and moon that is here around us. And Loka Loka meaning the edge of that. The edge between this visible world and the world beyond it, that is not lit by the sun and the moon. Meaning the world outside of our what we call physical space today, which really can be described as well in terms of the forms that appear here to our senses of this body. If we then take the also rather general descriptions thereof, oceans, islands, regions, often described, you know, these dvipas and varshas, often and mainly described in terms of vegetation and of people living there and how they are So what we have then is simply a general description of, could be, of the known world back then. Here we are, we have this round world around us that we can see in all directions, right? It has a radius stretching out into each direction, so there is a roundness to it, a mandala or a kolam or tala. And if we then travel to the edge of that, we come to another region. We will eventually reach an ocean, the saltwater ocean, if we are in India, right? But if we go north, then we will reach the mountain, the Himalaya. And then we will get closer to the center of it all, around which this all appears to rotate, because there is a star up there that stands still always, all night long, while the other stars are rotating around. And that one is not straight above our heads, but it's north. So, again, I said this before, but there's the notion there, or the appearance there of, you could say, a mountain or mountainside going up north. And then you have Jambudvip, which is really where you are. That continent there, which is then surrounded by salt water. And if you cross that, because they had ships back then too, you get to other islands with other vegetation, other people, and so on. And that, you know, becomes the seven seas, the seven continents. And you could say there are, like, you know, when we speak about the seven seas and the seven continents, they're kind of mythological, because they might be more or less, but some or other, as a general number being used there, not in the strict scientific, special geographic sense, but, you know, this big world here, stretching in each direction. And the reason why, how they then become described as circular is, of course, because the horizon around us is circular, and you go outside of the limit of that and you see more and you see more. So that is possible, because anyway, I spoke about that already, so I'm just trying to fill in here, but now I'm just repeating myself. Again, this is a I just throw this out here as food for thought, so to speak. And if someone finds reason in this to investigate more, then I would be happy to see where that leads. I'm just trying to follow the general principle here that, what is it, Occam's razor, what it's called, that when doing scientific investigation or research, always, you know, try to look at the simplest, most straightforward interpretation and understanding first.